Let us turn to the various levels of education evident in Hungary at the turn of the 16th century and begin our discussion with the universities. While flourishing universities were solidly established in Bohemia, Poland, and Austria, Hungary's efforts to do the same were invariably unsuccessful. Four attempts were made during the late Middle Ages at establishing institutions of higher learning, but after initial success, all four faltered and disappeared. The University of Pécs, Gymnasium, established in 1367, seems to have been dissolved by the end of the 14th century. Some historians with vivid imaginations contend that several hundred students from this university fought valiantly for God and country and died at the Battle of Mohács. The discovery of a stick with some cloth attached to it in the 19th century was then hailed as the banner under which these same students fought, and thus you have the ultimate relic. A second university was established at Obuda, Altofen, just south of the royal capital in 1395. The last evidence of its existence is the delegation of masters at the Council of Constance, which we recently referred to. Matthias Corvinus established the third university in 1465 at Pozsony, modern city of Bratislava or Prespurt. Following an auspicious start 2 years later, the university flourished but began to decline in 1472 following the death of its chancellor, Archbishop Vitéz. By 1490, the buildings of the university were used either for storage or were in such disrepair that it is obvious that both students and faculty had abandoned the university. The last attempt in establishing an institution of higher learning is also associated with Corvinus. He undertook steps to raise the Dominican Studium Generale of Buda to a full-fledged university. This institution never developed, however, beyond the Ordensstudium common to the Dominicans, and therefore cannot be called a true university. The general chapter of the Dominican order made several attempts to expand the studium at Buda, and even ordered the transfer in 1507 of 8 teachers from the school in Paris to strengthen the school in Buda. The fact is, however, that these teachers never left Paris, something that most Hungarian scholars have neglected to check out. And thus, the Studium Generale at Buda continues to decline. Although scattered references to a Studium Generale or a Universitas continue to appear in the general chapter deliberations of the Dominicans, there is no concrete evidence that a truly viable institution of higher learning existed in Hungary on the eve of the Battle of Mohács. The reasons for the inability of universities to flourish in Hungary are numerous. The most obvious among these seems to be the lack of sustained interest and financial support on the part of the monarchy and the upper clergy. Furthermore, a general lack of urbanization and the availability of university education in neighboring countries are also factors. The desirability of a university education was recognized by Hungarians quite early, and from the 13th century on, they frequent such foreign universities in Bologna and Paris in increasing numbers. Closest to the borders of Hungary were the universities of Prague, Krakow, and Vienna, and due to this proximity, there were large numbers of Hungarian students during the 15th and 16th centuries studying there. This is particularly true of Vienna and Krakow, while the cultural influence of the University of Prague on Hungary is negligible. Fortunately, the registers of Hungarian students at Krakow have survived. A separate bursa college was formed for the large number of Hungarian students enrolled there from the year 1493 to 1558. The record of this bursa and the matriculation list of the university show that between 1460 and 1500, over 1600 students from Hungary studied there. In the first 2 decades of the 16th century, between 40 and 50 students from Hungary were immatriculated each year. After the Battle of Mohács, there was a dramatic decline of students, and the bursa eventually was forced to close its doors due to the diminished numbers. Some of those who received degrees migrated from Krakow to Vienna, but more often to the Italian universities seeking further study. Those who return to Hungary after the completion of their studies at Krakow often received ecclesiastical benefits and found employment on the lower echelons of the royal chancery. Others still became teachers in municipal and cathedral schools. The influence of the Bursa was twofold, in that it played an active role in the life of the University of Krakow and created close ties between Krakow and Hungarian centers of learning, particularly the cities of northeastern Hungary. It was through these contacts at the Hungarian Bursa that people like Konrad Celsus and others established contacts in Hungary. Let me also stress that not all of the Hungarian students at Krakow were deeply involved in intellectual pursuit. The acta rectoralia of the university showed more troubles with Hungarian students than with any other group, mainly because of their pugnacious nature. They were constantly beating up on their fellow students. Particularly irritating was the habit of the Hungarians of going out on the feast of Holy Innocents and beating up any person who came into sight, stating that this was an accepted pattern in Hungary, and claiming that this was just revenge for the killing of the innocents in Bethlehem. Sounds like the kind of stories one hears from students, I think. In Vienna, the number of students from Hungary was so large that they constitute a separate nation, the Nazio Hungarica. From 1450 to the Battle of Mohács, the total number of students exceeds 2,900, according to the record. Here, as in Krakow, the number of students from Hungary decreases following the battle. Because of the excellence of Italian universities, as well as the close Italo-Hungarian relations since the Angevin period, a large number of Hungarians made the journey to Italy to study at the renowned universities of Bologna, Padua, and Ferrara. While it is true that students from Hungary could be found at almost all the institutions of learning in Italy, Bologna, Padua, and Ferrara were the three institutions which attracted the largest number of Hungarians in the second half of the 15th and early 16th centuries. The list of those who had studied at these universities reads almost like a who's who of important ecclesiastical dignitaries, chancery officials, and humanist scholars. The relative closeness and accessibility of the great Italian universities probably relieved the pressure for the establishment of a university in Hungary. As long as students could get university degrees, mainly legal training, in Italy, the need for a local institution of higher learning was not so acute. Of the Hungarian-born bishops and archbishops who presided over the 11 dioceses of the kingdom between 1490 and 1526, over 60% were graduates of Italian universities. Graduates of Italian universities were also numerous among the officials of the royal chancery, both under Ladislaus and Louis II. About half of the chancery secretaries were trained in Italy, and what is more important, they often kept in close touch with professors at their alma mater and with influential printers such as the Venetian publisher Aldus Manutius. These ties with Italy resulted in the spread and deepening of the humanistic influence which had begun under Matthias and fortunately did not die with him. Before leaving the subject of Hungarian to the Italian universities, mention must also be made of a large number of mendicants, mainly Dominicans, sent by the Hungarian province to study in Italy. Dominicans can be found at every important center of learning. Franciscans can be found in far fewer numbers. The presence of large number of Dominicans in Italy seems to support the previously expressed view that the Studium Generale of Buddha did not develop into an important center of education. Not only did it fail to meet the educational needs of the kingdom, but apparently did not even satisfy the requirements of the Dominican province. Hungarian students also frequented the University of Paris, but in smaller numbers. The lack of a dynamic university within the boundaries of Hungary is an obvious source of weakness, which places the country at a disadvantage when compared with its immediate neighbors, Poland, Bohemia, and Austria. Yet the results of this failure are not all negative as they first may appear. Since all the universities in the pre-Reformation period failed in Hungary, there was no alternative than to study abroad. The result was derived of a fairly cosmopolitan intellectual class, aware of the main currents of thought of Western and Central Europe. Hungarian students received far more than just academic degrees at the universities they attended. Close personal friendships developed with Italian, French, German, Austrian, Polish scholars, and these ties of affection and shared interests often lasted for a lifetime. Upon returning to their native land, Hungarian students often found a former professor and fellow student sent their dedicated books to them. Books for the Hungarian market were being printed in Italy, Vienna, and Krakow with increasing frequency in the 16th century. When Konrad Celtis came to Buda, he found a large number of enthusiastic supporters, among them Bishop Johannes Wittes the Younger, who was made head of the Fidelitas Literaria done in Vienna until his death in 1499. Aside from Hungarian admirers, Celtis also found Italians, Czechs, and Austrians at the Hungarian court. There seems to be no doubt that an East Central European humanism was in full bloom, and the three centers of it were Vienna, Krakow, and Buda. That Buda could compete on about equal terms with Vienna and Krakow shows that the lack of a university in Hungary was compensated by study abroad and an intense interest in intellectual currents prevalent at the time. Turning our attention from university education to other forms of instruction available, let us discuss cathedral and chantry schools. The development of cathedral and chantry schools in Hungary follows the general pattern in Western Europe. The decrees of the Third and Fourth Lateran Council called for the establishment of schools by the cathedral chapters so that instruction could be given to students in each diocese. How closely these orders were followed in Hungary is hard to determine, especially prior to the 13th century. During the 15th and 16th centuries, the fog of uncertainty lifts and some insight into the life of cathedral and chantry schools can be gained. A fairly complete list of the canons of each of the dioceses of Hungary is available for our period, and this allows the identification of some of the teachers. According to the statutes of the cathedral chapters of Bárod and Zagreb, remember, was part of the Kingdom of Hungary, the lector was in charge of instruction at the cathedral school. If the lector did not teach, he delegated his position to a sub-lector. Also among the canons, the cantor and the centaur were called upon to teach. The term lector or scholasticus is often used interchangeably as well as rector scholae in the records. Although all of the 11 Hungarian dioceses, plus Bosnia and Zagreb, show lectors, sublectors, and cantors in the registers, still it is uncertain that schools with continuous instruction can be found in each of these cathedral seats. For the 36-year period under on which we place our focus here, there is definite reference to schools or students in 6 cathedral towns and 1 chantry. Scattered evidence allows us to make some generalizations about the operation of these cathedral schools. Indication is that most of the students at these schools were clerici, that is, they had taken minor orders. There is, however, evidence that lay students attended as well. The statutes of the Archdiocese of Esztergom indicate clearly that what fees non-clerical students had to pay in order to attend school. There are repeated references also to students singing at mass and other religious occasions and receiving payment for it. Students as well as teachers show up in lawsuits as well as criminal cases. For example, canon from the chapter of Székesfehérvár, which is German, which in German is Stuhl Weißenburg, who was teacher or scholastic, who asked for dispensation in 1504 for having caused the death of a woman. It appears that the pious canon was asleep when somebody woke him up in the middle of the night with loud knocks on the church door. Armed with his sword, he ran out, found only a woman, cursed her, saying that the devil has brought her there, and in a fit of anger, stabbed her in the thigh. At this point, 2 eager students also show up and with a shield delivered a few blows at partem posteriorem sui. The poor woman expired in a week. Prohibitions against students carrying arms show up repeatedly in the documents, both in Hungary and, by the way, at the universities where they attended, particularly Prague and Krakow. Apparently, Hungarian students were most reluctant to give up their swords, saying that it was part of their clothing. There are also prohibitions against extravagance of dress and equipment. And Synod held at Lecce, today in northeastern Hungary, decreed that students, scholars, should wear long and proper attire. They should not wear gold and silver rings on their fingers. Also be avoided in public are belts, bags, saddles with gold decorations. Even Venetian copper should not be used. Their hair should be properly cut. Their undergarments should be closed. And red and green stockings should be avoided. In general, the students are to behave decently and properly so as not to offend the sensibilities of laymen. Transgressions were severely punished. Instructions at the Cathedral and Chantry School follow the example of Western European standards. The curriculum follows the quadrivium. Once the student learned to read and write, the teacher introduced the pupil to the Donatus and later to the Doctrinale of Alexander of Villegiris, Christianus, Mystica Moralia of Cato. The preparation of the students was very similar to the preparatory teaching at Parisian colleges. Those who finished their education at a cathedral or chantry school either continued their studies at one of the neighboring universities or became parish priests in villages, towns, or cities. Some received ecclesiastical benefices, but were often slow in taking their major orders, a practice very common in late 15th, 16th century Hungary. Students who went abroad for further studies often returned to their dioceses after receiving one or more degrees and were rewarded with canonships. The number of university-educated canons in this period is very high. Among these canons were a number of scholars, bibliophiles, and art connoisseurs, whose role in the history of early 16th century humanism has not been adequately treated yet. The schools of the religious orders present a special problem. The two major mendicant orders in Hungary, the Dominicans and Franciscans, placed renewed emphasis on education in the second half of the 15th century. Giovanni Capistrano exhorted the Franciscans to devote more attention to schooling in his tract, the Promovendum Studio Inter Minoris of Cervantes. In 1454, a provincial meeting of Franciscans held at Eger decried the lack of opportunity for higher education for the younger members of the order and encouraged that they be sent abroad. Franciscans did frequent the University of Krakow in fairly large numbers. The Dominican province in Hungary was reorganized and reformed by a Viennese theology professor, Leonardus Hunstichler of Brixenthal, who undertook the task of reform after 1454 and visited the Hungarian convents on several occasions. As a man of great learning, it is not surprising that he stressed education for members of his order and later recommended several Viennese Dominicans for the newly founded University of Pozsony. Besides many Dominicans in Italy, we find that the Hungarian province also sent some of its members to Paris and Cologne. Exactly one type of education was available at the various convents does, however, leave a number of unanswered questions. Although documentary evidence is scarce, there seems to be no doubt that the Mendicants had some excellent schools for their members. The fact that Franciscans and Dominicans frequented universities obviously implies that they had adequate preparation at the studium particulare of their respective convents. Another indication of their intellectual awareness is the active work the Mendicant orders performed in preaching and the role they played in the development of vernacular literature in Hungary in the last years of the 15th and the early decades of the 16th century. Important centers of Franciscan activity where sizable schools or libraries can be found were in the capital city of Buda, patched across the river, in Gyöngyös, in the southern town of Szeged, and in Csíkszomjó in Transylvania. The major Dominican houses were in Buda, Pozsony, and Kassel. Mention must also be made of a school the Hermits of St. Augustine operated in the episcopal city of Esztergom. The increasing secularization of society in the later Middle Ages is evident in the rise of schools in the towns and cities. While urbanization in Hungary did lag behind Western European standards, yet a fairly large number of schools were in existence in the last decade of the 15th century and the first quarter of the 16th. The need for some elementary acquaintance with reading, writing, mathematics, which are obvious prerequisites for commerce and for some of the trades, is the basic factor behind the rise of municipal schools. Well-established schools, however, went far beyond instruction on the elementary level, and many of the graduates of municipal schools found themselves at universities which Hungarian students frequented. The students were drawn mainly from the town itself and its immediate hinterland, although occasionally students from faraway places were enrolled for instruction. The teacher at the municipal schools was elected by the burghers with the consent of the parish priest. The schoolmaster was invited to the town and offered a yearly contract. Since towns often competed with each other for the services of a well-known schoolmaster, it is not surprising that the turnover was considerable. We also know of instances where the schoolmaster returned to a university for further study after teaching a number of years. A fairly large number of teachers were already university graduates when they were hired. Some even had risen to the magisterial dignity. In some cases, the schoolmaster had one or more assistants, called socius or gazelle or locatus, to aid in carrying out the tasks of teaching. The town and the schoolmaster agreed on a yearly salary, which was paid according to various installment schemes differing with each locality. The set amount the city paid was, however, supplemented by various additional payments to which the schoolmaster was entitled. First of all, the parents were sometimes obliged to pay a sum for each child attending the school. Further income was derived from one or more of the following sources: singing the Salve Regina in church, singing on the Feast of Corpus Christi, the Vigil of Christmas, Feast of St. George, and other feast days. The teacher could also receive payment for participation in processions, attendance at funerals, or singing the psalms at the Holy Sepulchre on Easter. Some of the towns also provided for firewood, and in the mining town of Chelmsfonia, the schoolmaster received half a halfen of meat each week. We don't know what a halfen is, but with the price of meat, it would be nice if something like this would be incorporated in our content. A short distance away, at another mining town, Kermitsvanya, a bonus was given to the master for extra effort among the young people. The case seems rather good and holds fairly steady during the 36 years of our period. By mid-century, however, inflation more than doubled the salaries and many of the teachers were in financial difficulty. While it is true that most schoolmasters were at least in minor orders, there were some who were laymen. Furthermore, those who stayed in a city or town for several years often became part of the municipal power structure. Several schoolmasters became notaries, rose to the position of justice, or became members of the city council. The students either lived with their parents or roomed with strangers. In some instances, we hear of students living in the school building itself. Just as the schoolmaster had opportunities to get extra money for various services, the students also could earn funds from benefactors, both from the city and from individuals. The most common way for students to receive money was to sing at mass, or during special religious devotions, or to guard the Holy Sepulchre at Easter time. Money was also paid for students for greeting newly elected judges and city council fathers, or in case the king or a powerful ecclesiastic passed the town. Students were paid for ringing the church bells at the opening of fairs, or ringing them in warning of an approaching thunderstorm. In the northwestern town of Sopron, all students received 3 pints of wine at Christmas time. The most interesting document concerning the education in the late 15th century is preserved in the Archiepiscopal Library at Esztergom. It is a codex of 250 pages and contains 6 sections. This volume was used at the school of Sárospatak, a lovely city in north Eastern Hungary, as a textbook and contain extensive marginal notations by its original owner, a certain Ladislav Szalkai, or Ladislav Szalka, who finished copying the work in 1490. The codex indicates that The schoolmaster at the time was a certain Johannes de Kishvarda, who received his bachelor's degree from Krakow a few years before. The six sections of the codex reveal the material that Ladislav Salkai and his fellow students at Sárospatak have mastered. The Salkai Codex is divided in the following way. Section 1 deals with astronomy, section 2 music theory, section 3 legal theory, section 4 literature and poetry, section 5 the same, section 6 letter writing. Since the sections were bound together later, we do not know what other parts there might have been which were not included in the Codex. Both the astronomical and the legal material of the Codex shows modernity, that is, acquaintance with the prevailing interpretations of the day. The most original part of the volume seems to be the section dealing with music. Ladislav Salkai, whose school book this volume was, had an interesting career before him. There's no indication that he ever attended a university, and although his social origins were lowly, his father was a cobbler, he rose to become Archbishop Primate of Hungary and died on the battlefield at Mohács. According to the anecdotal account of a 16th century historian, Gyurgy Szerényi, Archbishop Salkai was the main instigator for action against the Turks before the Battle of Mohács. To show his bravery and his resourcefulness, he's supposed to have told the king, quote, "When I was a student and the rector of the school, I was always able to get bed partners, with the help of my sword, from the herdsmen. Even when I was outnumbered, sometimes there were 12 of them, I was always able to get hurt." Quite a recommendation for a future archbishop. The Salkai Codex shows that instruction was in Latin at the municipal school, but it's also an indication that some German and possibly Hungarian were taught. The level of excellence of at least some of these schools can be seen by the fact that number of teachers with considerable reputation taught at these municipal schools. Andreas Günzi, who had received his degree from Krakow, became a much respected teacher in the school at Pesth until an invitation was extended to him because of his reputation to become head of the school in Kaszow. He left Pesth, settled in Kaszow, taught, became notary, judge, and councilman, and later even married a local woman. The excellence of the Kaszow school also attracted an English wandering scholar, a poet, Leonard Cox, who came to Hungary by way of Krakow. At one time was tutored to none other than Henry VIII, had attended Oxford, Cambridge, and the University of Paris. Another poet scholar, Valentinius Eck, was schoolmaster at a neighboring town, Bartva, in 1518. It is hard to imagine that university-trained men with considerable international reputation would have consented to become schoolmasters at municipal Skole if the level of instruction would have been elementary. The subsequent history of many of these city schools supports this view. The municipal schools will become, especially those in northeastern Hungary, important factors in the spread of Lutheranism in Hungary and will play a major role in the spread of Reformation doctrine. Schools such as the one in Bartva under Leonard Stöckel, who had studied at Wittenberg and New Melanchthon, or the school of Sárospatak under the great pedagogue Comenius, a century later, remained important centers of learning and religion. The number of municipal schools in existence between 1490 and 1526 can be fairly well established. There is definite documentary evidence for 37 towns with schools during this period, as well as several references to schools either immediately before this period or after it. We also know that a number of the towns had more than one school within their walls. In 1525, there were 7 schools in Buda, 4 in Pressburg, one of these a Jewish school, 3 in Brasov in Pennsylvania, and 5 in the southern town of Szeged. Before leaving the subject of city schools, one more observation must be made concerning them, their geographic location. We examined the map of the Kingdom of Hungary and indicate the location of the city schools. It becomes obvious that an overwhelming majority of them are located in the cities of northeast Hungary and to a lesser degree Transylvania. The reason for this can be briefly summarized in the following way. The weight of urbanization was in these regions. Because of mining and trade, these cities were still relatively rich. The closeness of Krakow, both as a center of trade and learning, were important. And these cities also had large German populations, which were obviously culturally more advanced than the Hungarian and Slavic towns. Added to this is still one more factor. These regions did not suffer the utter devastation the Turks inflicted on the Hungarian lowlands. Therefore, records, documents, buildings have survived in northern Hungary and parts of Transylvania in far greater quantities than in the Turkish-occupied region. To blame everything on the Turkish occupation, however, is historically not sound, for these were always the more highly developed regions of the Hungarian kingdom. Finally, a few words on the village schools of Hungary. Most rudimentary education, instruction in the Paternoster, the Ave Maria, and the Cradle, took place in the villages. The instruction was provided by the parish priest, in some instances by the village by a village school teacher, but these are very rare. Attempts were also made to teach singing so that the children could more fully assist at math. Because of the general insignificance of village schools, reference to them in documents are not very frequent and usually of an indirect nature. About 6 dozen village schools are mentioned in the 36-year period between 1490 and 1526. It is most unfortunate that we have such paucity of documents dealing with the village schools. More information on this elementary level of instruction would facilitate the evaluation of the status of literacy in Hungary. In conclusion, what is evident here is that an intellectual continuity remained following the death of Matthias Corvinus, and that the general decline of the kingdom in all other respects is not reflective in educational culture. The disaster of Mohács, on the other hand, marks a great turning point, not only in the political history, but cultural development as well. Because of the subsequent tripartite division of the kingdom, sectarian antagonism, and incessant wars, it really seemed that Hungary in mid-16th century was the stepchild of the state. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let's have questions.
This is a question for Bill Wright. The picture that you see on the paper is as an education changes from a rather unhappy condition before the Reformation to flourishing bloom after the Reformation. And this isn't a picture that I'm prepared for going to challenge in any wholesale way. And I'm certainly not going to challenge the point which I think you established convincingly, namely that Philip and his comfort were committed to education and active. In some ways, implemented. But I do have a number of particular questions. I've got three, in fact, and maybe I can shoot those three questions back and get your response to them in a block. You referred to decline of education before the Reformation. How do we know that? You did cite Egon Lau, who is an idolizer of Montreal Philip and a committed Protestant. He's writing 20 years after the Reformation and says, things were bad when the Catholics were in this case. I don't think that's a very solid basis for that statement. And if we look at the one piece of evidence that I know about, which I've done in my own work, which is the education of the last generation of Catholic clergy in Hesse, there were a relatively well-educated group, about 20% or more, at Drupal University, and these people have simply gotten their primary education in Hesse. So I'm not sure that we really know what the state of education has before the Reformation. Second point is that one of the first consequences of the introduction of the Reformation is to disrupt whatever exists in the way of primary and secondary schools in Hesse. That is to say, these schools are either in monasteries or they're taught by clerics, usually with alternates. And both of these institutions or both churches are dissolved with the Reformation. So the initial impact, though not intended, I mean, Philip is not aiming at this, is to disrupt what exists in the way of primary and secondary education. Now, what happens to those benefits, and those two after the Reformation, And I think here too, we don't really quite know what happens when it does settle. There's a lot of these benefits that are snapped up by noblemen and town council. Some go into the parish treasury. But as you indicated with a couple of present examples, town council tended to put education at a level of relatively low priority. They like bridges and other big fair walls and walls, as you said. So here too, it seems to me the picture is an unclear one. And I think it's a difficult subject just because these institutions, even after the Reformation, tend to be frail because of this low priority. So you can find a particular school existing and school master existing in one town in one decade, and 5 years later remains disappeared because the council is now self-indebted or the president is in the way. Third point, and this has to do with the central institutions of education. They certainly indicate the commitment on the part of the central government, that is, the university and the actual and the institutions which endure in the case of the university in the present day. But if they were in awfully shaky shape for at least some decades of the 16th century. For example, in the 1530s, one thing that Landgrave Philip does to his university is he snatches away a larger portion of the endowment that he'd given to him in the late 1520s because he needed the money for warfare. He was off to Wurttemberg in the early 1530s, off to Brunswick in the late 1530s, and he needs the money elsewhere. So he has for a number of years what is in effect a shadow. There's really not much going on there. The same kind of thing may have happened in 1550s, where we have to be talking about the possibility of the university collapsing altogether. So the institution is there. How many students are being taught and how many faculty will be teaching is another question. I think that's very uneven from decade to decade, and it may well be uneven in times that I kind of evidence I have on this subject that I don't know. So I mean, the only thing I'm suggesting is I wouldn't myself call Philip's devotion to education unflagging. I think this way, often we have lots of other priorities. Sometimes education was low on the list. And the picture as I see is a lot more checkered, as well as a lot more uncertain than the
well, if I may respond, I was not aware that I was picturing Philip as creating a rosy, if that was your word, school situation in Hesse. That was not my intention, my purpose. I think the purpose of my paper, as I read, was to demonstrate that the Landgrave did attempt to establish a system of schools. He attempted to standardize these schools. He attempted to have regular annual salaries for the schoolmaster to set the standards for curriculum and so forth. And I think he did these things. To go through your several points then, today one at a time, as to the decline, well, this is a study in itself, of course, and I have taken the ideas of several other scholars on the subject of decline. Most people seem to agree, in fact, that throughout Germany as a whole, throughout the empire as a whole, that education was in decline in the 1520s in particular. It's certainly true, as you said, that there was a large number of well-educated clergymen, but that does not in any way seem to me undermine what I've said here. In the 1520s, humanism in the schools and the Renaissance impulses for education had declined, particularly in Hesse. For that particular point, and I really didn't see any time to go into that issue. There are several sources which refer to this decline of school. Well, what was your second point again?
Well, let's see. We have a special need for school reform after the Reformation because of the very fact of the Reformation.
Oh, certainly, yes. I remember now. I thought, in fact, that I indicated the Reformation itself was a reason for the decline of school in the 1520s and 30s. Naturally it was. Clerics who left their monasteries and their schools and so forth went to study in Marburg, for example, in Hesse. This is true. Many schools had to be closed because the clerics who were teaching them went to study at the University of Marburg. Certainly. case. But again, I do not think that that detracts from the point that a regularized school situation was created. Edinburgh Warfare in the 1530s in Nantucket, detracting the funds, I'm not aware of that particular point, and I'm not certain that it can be demonstrated what document you took it from, I don't know. But in any degree, I think it's quite amazing that compared to England and several of the other territories, that in Hesse, in fact, the Landgrave Philip was to put a remarkable percentage of his monastic revenues into schools and cultural areas.
I can't speak for Hesse. I've done a little work in Württemberg. Württemberg, 1536, when Ulrich went back to Württemberg, there were 70 towns and about 500 communities, and there were 50 schools. Then in 1559, when Duke Christopher enacted his famous Rosicrucian Ordinance, there were 180 schools in Württemberg. And by 1600, there were 401. Now, these are documented. This is not guesswork. And I think that's an interesting parallel to what you're saying. I don't know whether Hesse has been worked through as carefully as Württemberg in this respect. And I'm depending here on the research of Eugen Schmidt. Then the other point, Lawrence Stone has his thing on the development of education in England. Something like 1550 or 1650, somewhere in that time thing. And he makes the somewhat reckless assertion that he thinks that there was no society where more people had a chance to go to school than in England during this period. I think there are something like 1,200 or 1,400 communities in England, and there are 400 schools. So if you compare Württemberg with 500 communities and 400 schools in 1600, I have a feeling that Stone has not taken in all the evidence before he makes this remark.
Yes, I've been also working in Württemberg in the archives on educational history in specialized ways. My question was whether you had any control on how these things turned out in Hesse. But certainly in Württemberg, it is possible to check some of these things out. Foss and other men have to try to do that. One thing I'm curious about is, I think it'd be very interesting, the difference between the use of the Kirchen Constant in Hesse and the use that Christoph made of it in Württemberg, and then the very strong control that Württemberg put on it, that this money was not to be taken away from the clergy or from school youth. And the fact that Christoph can use this money for especially the German schools or the trivial schools in small communities. And here there certainly seems to be a difference from Hesse, and a strong difference from the Hungarian example, where you probably didn't have this kind of central government strong enough to push through something like this. Or possibly the level of urbanization wasn't strong enough to both testify either. Or the presence of many German and non-Hungarian people in some of these communities.
There were many orders passed, of course, during the Philip's reign, regulating chess in Hesse. This is another complex study by itself.
The reason I raised the question of control is to check in the archives or to check somehow how these, how the practice conformed with the, laying down the law, because in Württemberg, in some things, Christoph found to his dismay that once you set a law, no matter how good the law is, it still has to be enforced. And if you didn't have the personnel, or you didn't have the organization of the bureaucracy to do this, sometimes it simply fell flat. And the fact that orders have to be given out all the time seems to be an indication in some cases that the original orders weren't carried through.
Could I ask an informational question which bears upon one of the points that you raised, and to which Professor Wright spoke on the University of Marburg in the on into the 40s and 50s? Are there extant matriculation records for Marburg that are complete in this period?
There are published sources, yes, of the people who taught there and the students. I don't know that they're complete, but they're published, in fact.
Yeah. And do they show a decline in
well, Marburg was found
attendance at the school?
You mean as a result of the time of the Reformation? No, because the university was founded in 1526.
No, I don't mean then, but I mean
because of the war.
Is there a growth, and then the wars that Philip has later on? But is there a decline? Does the university suffer some problems there? Do you know?
No, I don't know.
Yeah.
I think you, as Phil said, the matriculation records are in Grand Island. You can check it.
Yeah.
My source of information was, I think, this channel by, you probably know, I forgot the author, but there's a big book on Harvard University published in 1927 on the aphorism of an Irish and comment about difficult finance because of war. That's what my belief in that.
But Wilhelm Wolff's comprehensive study that I referred to at the end of my paper, and it is the most comprehensive study to date on what was done with monastic and other types of church funds, he makes the astounding assertion that over 50% of his funds were utilized for cultural purposes, including education and the like. And to my knowledge, no one has disproved that.
There's been an awful lot of critical comment on it.
And yet I haven't found any evidence of some truth.
Yes, question.
Have you considered at all the Swiss influence? You start a central date in 1527. Now, it was the connection with Switzerland. Philip first comes into contact with students in 1524. In 1527, you've got the beginnings, or rather, you're well into the active correspondence between Zwingli between Zwingli and Philip. Exactly what you described is exactly the situation that was set up in Zurich and in a number of South German towns. So it is true that it is parallel with the German one, for political and other reasons, Philip was particularly interested in the Swiss setup. And certainly those two treatises on interpretation, one in Latin, and then an extension, partly a translation of it in German. He knew that Ulrich, of course, couldn't read Latin, but there was a highly intelligent person, which so many people seem to forget. I cannot but think that there is, at any rate, the possibility of Swiss influence as well as Lutheran.
When I commenced this study, I examined Linz's correspondence between Zwingli and Friedrich Hesse, and I found no indication that there was any discussion of education.
I know.
It's interesting in this connection of the relationship of Zwingli to Friedrich Hesse that you bring up now, that a recent book by René Hausbeard, the main thesis of this book, which you really should look at, maybe you have read already, is that in fact Philip should be given more credit for the development of the ideas of a league against the emperor, in fact. He really should not be put in the place of playing the second fiddle to Zwingli, but he certainly did that.
But of course, there was a lot of correspondence which we don't know about. There was the considerable personal intercourse because Zwingli is talking to Philip at Marburg before Luther.
Well, that's 1529.
Oh, yeah.
Following the establishment. I did look into the correspondence that does exist.
Yeah. I imagine through Boots here there would be more Swiss influence.
First book, Sturm comes into the picture, doesn't it, as well as Sturm?
Yes, but as I indicated in my paper, and I examined this very carefully because I thought, as you did, that perhaps Boots would play a role because of the important development of schools, but as I indicated, I think that the evidence indicates that the influence does not go that way because the major characteristics of schools and supported schools that we see in Strasbourg were not incorporated in Hesse. In fact, Bucer was holding up to the city council in the Gutachten that I read, upholding Marburg as an example.
I'd like to then pursue the question of what then is the stimulus for fellow professors in action? It does not seem to be external, as it is like strictly within the Lutheran impulse of the Reformation.
Thank God, Luther.
You believe me that you have either you have to have educated clergy, educated Protestant ministers, or you have an expanding bureaucracy, and you need to have government officials.
Yes.
And in Gutenberg, it's easy to document with the Collegium of Austria and the Tübingen University and the entire promotion of Christoph that this is what he had in mind.
Oh, yes.
No, that's the tradition of the administrator, the church and the state.
You have the requirement that anyone who went through the University of Tübingen on scholarship had to make himself available to state government. They had first refusal.
There was later an enactment in Hesse requiring that anyone who received a scholarship had to work there. This came in the 1540s. I don't remember the
exact year. Yeah. By the way, those who have spoken about the decline in university numbers, which of course is true, sometimes forget that at Wittenberg, the numbers were going up and that people crowded to the new university of Wittenberg for very obvious reasons, of course, Lutherans and others, and that has to be offset against the other forms.
I may add here that a large number of Hungarian students who used to go to Krakow before, after the Reformation would get a foothold in northeastern Hungary, then proceed to go to Wittenberg.
And you get Hungarians by the way, Basel.
Oh, yes. And in fact, that all of the major parts of
the Hungarian.
Yes.
Further questions or comments? Yes.
I think that's one of the most interesting avenues for Eastern European education on the university level today. It's outside of your period, but after the Counter-Reformation begins, or even before, then you have the Protestant nobles in Hungary and also in Poland sending their, and Bohemia, and sending their people to Western Germany or to other parts of Central and Western Europe. It's interesting in Tübingen that Christoph has good relations with Drosteville in Lithuania and Poland. Some of them sent their sons to Tübingen in order to be given a good Protestant education. In one of these cases, because the students carried their swords around, one of them got killed. And poor Christoph is more concerned because of the left-wing radical Reformation literature in his library than he is that this poor student has been killed. And I'm hoping someday, from documents in Stuttgart, to do an article on the presence of the Polish students in Tübingen from our national level.
Very interesting that Polish students from the aristocracy are not heavily represented in the student body of Krakow in the 15th century, and in fact they aren't elsewhere in Europe to a certain extent.
Certainly strong in Padua and hardly.
Yeah. But it's precisely the time that the aristocracy begins sending their children to universities where it becomes part of the education of a gentleman. They go not so much to Polish university as the university to the West. There's a marked decline in the just simply the physical size of enrollment at Krakow in the second half of the 16th century. The enrollment is never again so high as it is. It peaks, late 15th, very early 16th century.
Yes, just a question of information. Did I hear you give the number of village schools in Hungary between 1490 and 1523?
Yes.
And it was roughly 6,000, about 72 or 73.
Thank you.
That is, these are the ones that, during this period, there is definite documentary evidence. And by the way, most of these are backhanded evidence, where a schoolmaster during a trial appears and gives testimony. So we know that the schoolmaster in that particular village wasn't interested.
That may indicate part of the answer to my question, because I was going to ask, to what extent does missing evidence from elsewhere in Hungary suggest that there may have been really quite a bit
more? Oh, there's no doubt that there were quite a bit more. And again, just as in the case of the municipal schools, the largest number of the village schools are in the peripheral area where the Turks never advanced.
And this helps a little with Norman Stone's generalization about England and all that. There is no evidence from England for the variety.
Yes, well, the Turks never demonstrated in England.
There's plenty of evidence for village schools. That's just not, there can't be pinpointed. It's just that they were there.
On the other hand, some Hungarian historians go to the other extreme and maintain that, you know, Hungary was the center of everything in the 15th and early 16th century, and just because the Turks destroyed it, therefore we can't prove this.
Well, it clearly was not Krakow, was it? Any further questions or comments? Well, thank you very much for coming this afternoon.